Broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, it's time for Point Taken. Here are your hosts, Steve Scafidi and Kristen Bry.
Someone got a birthday, I wonder who. Someone got a birthday, I wonder who.
Oh, that would be Kristen Bry.
What is that from?
King of the Hill.
King of the Hill, one of our great shows on network television. Anyway, happy birthday, 40th birthday.
Thank you, 40th birthday.
June 1986 is when you came into this world.
It is.
Yeah,
thanks. June 1986, limited edition shirt on today.
So like a lot of people that are in the public eye, are you getting bombarded with all the messages and all the stuff?
Yeah, getting a lot of text messages as of this morning.
That's fun.
I posted, Mike and Frankie made me a card and I posted a picture of the card.
Very nice.
But yeah, so it's a I know some people don't like attention on their birthday. Big shock. I'm don't mind attention. And so so the birthday texts are very fun.
Yeah. So I know you have big plans. You're going to Summerfest.
We're going to Summerfest later today. Hang out for the evening. See some Third Eye Blind, which is very millennial of me.
That's not a cliche.
Although is Third Eye Blind more millennial or Gen X?
I have no idea.
It's not a boomer.
I'd argue it's on the border.
It's on the border.
Yeah, it is on the border.
I think Passion Pit is also playing tonight, which is definitely millennial. That is definitely like the sound of my 20s. So we're feeling good.
So look for that youngish-looking 40-year-old with the wild curly hair dancing her, you know what, off at Summerfest to celebrate her 40th birthday.
Come say hi. If you're there this evening and you see me, please come say hi.
So I don't often put my teases into the outline that you lovingly create for our show every day, but I couldn't resist one. So not only did you get a present on your birthday, or presents, country of Iran got a really big present.
Big
in the United
present.
States.
Well, so far.
Yeah, $300 billion present by the president. I guess, and I know we're going to sort of go through some of this stuff, but to me, it got us nothing that we went through all this trouble, including the loss of lives, injuries,
money,
billions of dollars,
war
spent.
Chest.
Yeah. Equipment, military equipment, some lost forever, to achieve a negotiation that probably could have happened without even the war effort. Because all we're doing is essentially agreeing on a 60-day conversation. Memorandum of understanding, which this president does love. Every supposed peace deal he makes and every trade deal he makes is always starts with this memorandum of understanding where they like tick off the things they want. But there's very little after the 60 days or after the 30 days. A look at what actually we received.
Well,
in the deal.
I think it's around 800 words. It's 14 points.
Yeah.
In comparison to, and this is like, functionally, how different is an MOU from the final deal that was signed under Obama? But I think that was 165 pages. And so it's feels light on detail still.
It is, because it's a lot about conversation, negotiating, achieving the final deal in a maximum of 60 days. One of the things that's open for conversation, and it was discussed a lot on network TV, broadcast TV as well, is the fact that there's going to be no tolls to use the Strait of Hormuz now, but that's something that in the future there'll be a negotiation on whether that should be part of the deal, sort of an international settlement. So we go from a free situation, which was before, so now we may have to pay to use the Strait of Hormuz. So how is that a win for us?
Well, it's interesting because it's at least doing a quick survey of reactions to, because at first this was leaked and then they finally just released it to journalists yesterday. And so some of the feedback initially, conservative radio host Eric Erickson said on Wednesday, this is an American surrender.
Yep.
Ted Cruz said, I think the president, unfortunately, is receiving bad advice.
Mm-hmm.
Lindsey Graham is skeptical of the agreement and referred to Vance on social media as the architect of the deal, which is also interesting. And maybe we at some point I want to talk about the whole Vance of it all, because he's supposed to be on a book tour now.
Right. He was on The View yesterday.
And it has now turned into him kind of being the face of the deal, which is interesting because he has not spoken much about, I know they've sent him over there for negotiations, but this is one of the guys who very much prior to this administration was a no new wars guy, right? And was basically an anti-war guy. And I don't think he was necessarily talking about this a whole lot when we first got in there 4 months ago. And so we can come back to that, but I think it's interesting to see how this plays for his presidential hopes.
Well, the president basically put it all on his shoulders. Yeah. He said the parts that you like, I'll take credit for that. The rest,
if it works, it's mine.
Yeah. So I mean, it's basically his deal now. And again, I'm reading the exact language. At least $300 billion for the reconstruction and economic development of the Islamic Republic of Iran. Keyword Islamic. There's no change in leadership. There's no change in philosophy of government. They're not going to do anything differently. It's still an extreme, I think, Islamic country. And I think that's certainly not a win for us. Now, the president argued yesterday at his press conference in France. Was he in France? I think he was in France, yes. Macron. That this was just part of it's their money. So at some point, it has to be given back to them. Well, does it? They've caused us a lot of consternation and a lot of grief. Do you have to give it back to them? How is this money obtained? What's the sources of the money? Well, what's the circumstances?
It always just comes back to the hypocrisy of how President Trump and the criticism of the deal that was in place and how bad of a deal it was. It was a terrible deal, terrible deal, terrible deal. And what there is nothing that I understand that we are getting out of this that is makes us more safer, makes us wealthier, really, or changes anything for the better than where we were at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, I don't think so. And I think a lot of people, including you mentioned a bunch of people commenting on it that are conservative. Ben Shapiro also said a bad deal, paraphrasing. And the final piece of this, one of the final pieces, it's subject to a United Nations Special Council, Security Council resolution. So you have five countries with veto power, U.S., U.K., France, China, Russia. They can blow it up. So then what do we have? We've given them $300 billion, potentially, and we get nothing, including now a charge potentially to use the Strait of Hormuz, which we use a lot. And it has a definite impact on our energy prices and a lot of other things that we've talked about on other shows throughout the year. We'll continue the conversation. It's 10:15 on 620 WTMJ, Bert Day. We'll have some fun stuff later in the show. I've got some questions for you.
Oh, okay.
Yes, important questions. And by the way, we just dropped our latest Overtime on our podcast page, or just search Overtime. It's back. Took a little hiatus because I was off a lot and you were doing your projects, your side projects, your side hustles, your side gigs. What do you refer to them as?
Just my work. Other job.
Your other work. That's like hustle.
I worked a lot of it last night. We got an outline.
All right. You're moving forward. We'll do all of that and more right here in Point Taken, 620 WTMJ. Stephen Kristen on the birthday of all birthdays for a 40-
I don't know if it's the birthday of all birthdays.
Well, for you it is, because we're talking about you.
That means I'm exactly 40 years younger than the president, because he just turned 80.
Yeah, you're halfway there.
You think I'll make it to 80?
Of course. Why wouldn't you?
I don't know.
Well, there's no guarantees
life. There's no guarantees in life.
But given your level of fitness, your passion, your energy for life, I would say you're in a good place.
All right. We'll take it.
All right. So one of the texters says, well, what would you have done? You answered it brilliantly. I think that was your answer. Not gone to war.
Not gone to war. There was another option.
Yeah.
The option that basically every president prior to this, like since the 70s, has chosen is like, yeah, maybe we should figure out all the other ways to deal with Iran before going to war. And despite them being, you know, an enemy of ours for a long time, there was a lot of decisions for a lot of reasons of why this was not a good idea, why no one has done it prior to this administration.
Yeah, and we have probably the most powerful defense system in the world, right? The technology, the firepower, the manpower, the women power, all of that stuff. And there are ways you can do things covertly to achieve the same aims that this didn't achieve, right? We did all of this. 50,000 troops, by the way. I looked it up. 50,000 troops committed to this war effort. 50,000. That's why we're talking billions and billions of dollars to achieve something that could have been done sitting at a table without launching a war. They would have come to the table. They would have. Because some of these things they wanted. They want the $300 billion back before the war. They want at some point, they wanted that at some point to use their geopolitical advantage of having that Strait of Hormuz run by their country for financial gain. They would have done that before the war. That's why this stuff matters. It is not a good example of showing leadership in the world when you basically bend over and give them whatever they want. Sorry if that hurts your feelings, but that's the way it is. And for my conservative friends, and I heard from a lot of them in the last couple of days about a lot of different topics.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And just via text? You just texting each other?
Email, text, whatever.
Right.
I'm getting a lot of talking points. And some of the talking points people send me, I can tell who wrote them. They're so obvious, like the Shapiros of the world and some of the other commentators. I can actually tell who wrote them, or the Scott Jennings, you know, on CNN. It's like so obvious. So your response to me being critical of the administration is to send me a talking point.
Well, which, what are some of the talking points?
What was the one yesterday? What was our topic yesterday? We were my blowing up this idea that we're going to somehow transform the reflecting pool to make it look blue. Somebody sent me this long scientific thing of how this administration was doing it the right way by sealing it. When anyone with a functioning brain knows that was not the right way to handle it. The only way this is going to stay crystal clear water is to have a circulation. But you spent all that time, texter, or actually it was an emailer, writing this long, which basically you stole from somebody I think I know in a local radio here. And you basically just cut and paste all that and sent it to me as like, you don't know what you're talking about. Yeah, I do. Because today, there are chunks of that blue painted surface floating to the top. The paint's not adhering already.
God.
$14 million. That's just one example. And look, everyone knows I'm not a fan of political party talking points, even though I self-identify as a Republican. Hate them. Because it's lazy. It's unintellectual. It doesn't show that you're using your gray matter to any degree. You're just cutting and pasting stuff you see on the internet. I am sick and tired. I know this is sort of a speech. I wasn't going to make a speech on your birthday, but maybe I'll make it.
It wouldn't be my birthday if you didn't make a speech.
That's true. Wouldn't be a show if I didn't make a speech at some point. We are in love somehow with the internet and the power to take things and ideas and rants that you see on the internet and then make it your own as sort of your evidence that you're intelligent or educated on an issue. It actually proves the opposite.
There was actually a great, I'll go find it. There was a great Substack I wrote, read as far as because of the internet and because of how much we consume, none of us have original thoughts anymore. Like we're constantly looking for someone's take and then like iterating our own take instead of just sitting with a set of facts and thinking about what do I actually, given the information I have, what do I actually think about this before immediately being bombarded with other people's opinions about it? And like the purposeful effort it takes to now try to think, what do I think before immediately looking externally?
Yeah, it's done every day. I have good friends that do this to me all the time. I'm like, seriously, use your brain. Okay, you sent me that. So let me ask you a question. Two things. The power of conversation, not me sending you something, you sending me back, and we're actually not listening to each other, but the power of conversation. And secondly, beyond what you just sent me, what does that mean to you? What does that suggest that the real right answer is here? Because everyone has what they think their answer is. But the power and the wisdom of a crowd is you get to the best possible solution with a diversity of viewpoints. And when I see a party, either party, suggesting this is the way we must do it, without the conversation, the communication with people who think differently on the same subject. Look, I understand, Texter, that Iran was a nuclear threat. I don't like it.
They did not have a nuclear bomb yet,
no,
though.
They have
uranium.
Yeah, moving towards or have enriched uranium.
But
that is a threat, yes.
But the Texter just said, we forget that they had a bomb?
No.
We don't know
that. We assume they don't. But we know the threats. But we also can use our brains, collective intelligence, our great defense systems, to understand there's other ways to go after this. And perhaps a targeted response at these sites may have been the answer. But 50,000 troops, billions of dollars, lost lives, lost equipment, and lack of respect in the world, which is not unique to Iran and that region, matters. And when we talk about the power of this country, the power of this country that we're losing, my opinion, maybe not yours, you can text if you want, is that we are not being respected in the fashion that we were, let's say, 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago. I don't think we are. We're diminished, even with our closest allies who look at us and think, what the hell's going on there? And the only way that changes is when they come to our country and say, you know what? I actually like those people. Their government leaders are idiots, but I actually...
These people are great.
Yeah, they're fascinating and fun.
Go to Bucky's. It's some unlimited soda.
All right. Your thoughts are welcome. Speak for yourself, the texter says. Absolutely. That's what we're paid to do. Speak for ourselves. Lots more coming up. Point taken. Birthday edition on 620 WTMJ. As always, we appreciate all the texts that have been coming in. Yeah, there's a lot of...
Thank you for the birthday texts, too.
Yeah, absolutely. Happy birthday, Kristen Rye, 40th birthday. I understand this is a open-ended conversation because we have this like 60-day sort of moratorium or memorandum of understanding, but we're not to the end of the road here. We have to work with the leaders of Iran, whoever that is, whatever they represent, to come up with something that works for both countries, with the goal, I would think, for our country to have a non-nuclear weapon-powered Iran.
Yeah, I mean, I think someone texted in saying, you know, do you forget that we've effectively neutered them? I don't know if we know. I mean, if that's what we're working towards, and that includes, because I know part of this is negotiating that they can no longer fund Hezbollah or different terrorist groups and organizations that are making the world less safe. So, like, I do think there is, when this is all said and done, if there is less, peace in the Middle East is such a cliched term, but if there, there is less ongoing
hostility
yeah. and death and the threat of a nuclear weapon being, you know, put like made, created, and then used against Israel, all of that like is yet to be seen. So if you are right, I don't know if it's proven that they are effectively neutered right now. If we get to the place where that feels true, maybe this will have all been worth it.
Yeah, then we have something. But ultimately the answer, I just had this conversation with a friend of mine. The answer in the Middle East is if the wars are fought with words, not weapons. Because we've had weapons for millennia in the Middle East. It has to change.
Isn't it crazy that we have not evolved past war as a species?
Well, we made war easier with the drones.
But like, if you just, yeah, okay, we got a break. Welcome back to Point Taken. I am Kristen Bry. He is Steve Scafidi. And this is, so one of our avid listeners, shout out to Peter.
Yeah.
Loves to, lots of factoids. They've never met Peter in person, but texts us a lot of information. He's a very smart guy. So it's almost like he was knew where we were going next.
Right.
He just texted in saying, I had a professor back in the 70s when AI was a dream that was gradually developing, but computer hardware wasn't at all yet powerful enough to host it. And the professor predicted that once AI entities fully evolved, they would transport themselves out in space to get away from destructive human emotions, egos, impulsiveness, and aggressive violence, and then watch over us on Earth and try to protect us from having senseless wars and destroying the planet. Mm. So obviously that was a reaction to us saying, like, have we not evolved against past wars? But the other thing we were going to talk about is how good AI videos are getting that even experts are starting to have a hard time deciphering them.
Yeah, it's less Peter's description and more just fear that, man, there's something that's, you can't even tell if it's real or not.
Yeah.
That's my fear.
And so, you know, there's been more for like Tom Hanks, Sanjay Gupta. Last week when you were gone, we were talking about the AI political video for James Tallarico. And so this was, I was reading about it. So it's his name's Hani Farid.
Sounds right.
Who's a leading deepfake expert. And he told the New York Times that in the last 6 months, he feels like he is going blind because it's getting impossible to spot the counterfeits. And he's struggling to do what he's always done, which is help journalists and governments and human rights organizations validate key footage, especially from war zones. And he says, quote, within a year or two, our whole visual system will be utterly useless.
Here's why this is very worrisome to me. We have government. You put this in the outline. The governments are sharing some of this stuff now. Actual governments are sharing this stuff. And here's where it gets really...
Sharing fake stuff as if it's real.
Yeah. And here's where it gets really concerning. Because if you can create something that says, for example, the United States did this horrific act, or whatever, pick any country.
Like we bombed a school?
Yeah. And then you show horrific graphic pictures. There could be an immediate... high-level dangerous response militarily that's based on something that didn't actually happen.
Did you watch that Netflix movie? Steve Carell.
I did watch that.
Jason Schwartzman.
Yeah.
It was like the four tech billionaires and their AI, and it's like that's exactly the plot.
Yeah.
While they're all in like Aspen somewhere, like the world is burning down because of AI videos
trying to kill their friend.
And like the way that like people are reacting to videos that aren't even real.
Yeah, and I put it at the bottom. There's an answer for this. Anything that's AI has to be branded AI.
So I saw that you put that as far as that is the obvious solution.
Yes.
How do you enforce it? Who's responsible? What are the, like, what body is responsible for it?
Congress says to any tech company, this is a requirement. It can be a watermark. It can be subtle, but it has to be branded that it's artificially intelligence created.
But think about what it would take to monitor that, right? And I'm saying as far as
that's the how question,
right? Most of us are like, yes, this feels obvious. But if you start thinking about, just think about political ads. And so do you, when it's a, you know, if political campaign ads that are, you know, say that break some kind of campaign finance law, do you ever go after the people who played the ad?
There are lawsuits based on some of this stuff.
But that's the thing. It's like, who would have to be held responsible? Who has the most to lose in order to actually self-monitor because the fine or the consequence would be so high? But then you have to make the consequence that high. And do you go after the individuals who are making the videos? Do you go after the platforms that host the videos?
Twofold. Okay. Yeah, both. But it has to start with a regulation that says, this is the law of the land. If you're using artificial intelligence to create a video or content, it has to be branded as such.
Jail time?
Absolutely.
If you publish something that doesn't have a demarcation that it's AI?
Also, the significance of the act.
A fine or actually going to jail?
Yeah.
Or going to prison?
Yeah. Think about the significance of the act. If it causes harm for people, not just like personal, you know, pride or whatever, you're personally offended by it, but actually results in death or violence? Absolutely. And I, you know, we always get caught up, those of us in talk radio, on the how question. How do you do this? And it often is a stumbling block to actually then doing something about it. We have to understand just because something's hard doesn't mean we shouldn't do something about it.
Oh, I'm not saying we shouldn't. I'm asking what you have to figure out the how if you're going to do it, though.
I just told you. You have to create legislation that's directed towards these specific things.
I understand. And in the legislation, you have to write in enforcement.
Yes. And enforcement has to be done by the federal government, Department of Justice, if you're talking about a federal case. And obviously, down the ladder of local jurisdictions.
Do you think that's going to happen?
I think it has to happen at some point. Because this, as you said, as we started this conversation, it's dangerous.
And the only reason why I said this, I think, when it was last year? Yeah, last year when Amy Klobuchar had that deep fake happened about her reacting to Sydney Sweeney or something like that. And then she wrote a op-ed for the New York Times about needing to regulate this. The only reason why I think I'm surprised it actually isn't moving a little bit faster is because in this world, politicians also have a lot to lose as far as their face and voice and likeness being used in fake videos to defame them and slander them. And so, you know, having a little skin in the game as far as what they have to lose maybe would make them move a little bit faster.
Look,
but
everybody sort of has experienced already, if you're involved in the internet at all, the fun part of AI, right? Donald Trump doing goofy things, or pick your, you know, the Democrat you don't like, and they're, you know, in some weird video doing, you know, some dance routine. We all get that, you know, and that's essentially harmless, I guess. But when you're talking about situations where you can escalate, they can escalate very quickly by deceiving people, deception as a sort of a tool to get a final result that you think is important, but actually could be very dangerous in the world. We have to do something, and it has to start with a president who, let's be honest, has made friends with many of the tech companies and their owners and their leadership groups, and has basically given them a free pass on this issue. Congress, what have they done on it? Nothing. They've had a couple of hearings.
They've passed the one as far as like deep fakes with like sexual
content. Yeah. Which is a good start. But why stop there? I think this has a tremendous risk for our population. I wish I had Peter's optimism that somehow the AI overlords would look at us and say, we're going to just remove that without them even knowing that we're doing it. You know, they're that smart, that all knowing.
Did you watch Begonia?
No.
Okay. The similar thoughts as far as
deceiving people.
Well, no. It's just like as far as just as a species, as a human species, our failings because of ego, because of the destructiveness that we create, and that we can't get past some of this like lizard brain behavior.
I had this conversation. Alex Stroh interviewed me for the latest episode of Scoopidiology, and he asked.
I can't wait to listen to this.
It's a great listen, and he asked great questions. He's a great interviewer and a great talent here at Good Karma. But he asked me what I think was the difference in my life, and I've done a bunch of really cool, interesting things in my careers, plural. And one of the things that I pride myself on is, and I get the irony, I talk for a living. But I was also known for accomplishing things. And we too often now are giving people credit for saying stuff or posting stuff. I'm sick of that BS. Do something. So Congress, if you're elected leader, state legislature, if you're elected leader, instead of arguing about, in this case of our state, tax relief bill, or Congress, the issue we're talking about now, actually get something done, because you're not doing that. Get you know what done is my motto and my mission statement in life for the rest of my life, however lucky I'm going to live. Get it done.
Get it done.
I shortened it from four letters.
Get her
to two.
Done.
Yeah, get her done. That's the message, man. And I'm sick and tired of these people who just live on talking. And I get the irony. So save the text. Quick break. Oh, I got to talk about the obvious. Mrs. Kristen Bri celebrating her. Look at that cupcake.
All right. So for anyone watching the YouTube stream right now, I'm holding up my gift from Kathy Scafidi.
Yeah, the funfetti.
Who made me funfetti, made me 12 funfetti cupcakes.
They look amazing.
They smell great.
They do smell
great. They look amazing.
I sampled one last night because she made a couple extra for me. So I had a cupcake before you had a birthday cupcake.
But now the question is, if there's only 12, there's more than 12 people that work at this building.
You have to decide, Kristen Bri, who, and I don't want one. I already had one. So the 12 teammates or family members who qualify to receive a Kristen Bri 40th birthday cupcake.
What hoops should I make them jump through?
As many as possible. I mean, I'm serious, man. Make them do a song, maybe a dance. And I would record all this for clever, funny
content,
snarky videos.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So get some of our teammates to
Jazz,
help you.
Get it together.
All right.
Figure out what you're going to do in order to get one of these cupcakes.
All right, because I'm a person of history. I want to just sort of cover a few things that have happened in the 40 since, you know, 40 years ago was a big moment. It was 1986, as your shirt probably displays. June 1986 is when Kristen came into the world. Top movies?
It was a hot day. I do remember that. It was a Wednesday. I think it was a Wednesday and a hot day.
Well, you don't remember. You were told about
it. My mother told me.
Yeah. Top Gun came out.
Wow.
Yeah, 40 years. And they've had one new one since, and another one's coming. One of my favorite movies of all time, Matthew Broderick, Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Great movie.
I could watch it over. When they do when he sings Donkey Shane, and Help.
Sloan.
Yeah, Sloan. What happened to her?
Total babe.
What happened to her?
I don't know.
That'd be like
she was also in Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
She's like 70 now. Right?
Yeah, she was a babe, though.
Stand By Me, great movie. Rob Reiner, I think, directed it. Aliens, one of my favorite sci-fi movies of all time. And this is a classic. Pretty in Pink. You probably know that movie.
Of course. I know all those movies.
Who was the dude? The guy she wanted at the end. He had the cool car. He was like, was it Alex? Or
I don't remember what his name is. That was another actor who was very attractive, who I don't think did a ton of movies besides that
one. He got out of the business.
Yeah.
And he was a stud.
He was a stud.
Yeah. Pretty in Pink. News, launch of the Mir space station. The Chernobyl disaster happened 40 years
ago. That was 40 years ago.
Yeah, I just watched a doc on that.
Did you watch the HBO series?
Yes. Ooh, fantastic. Great acting in that, by the way. The Statue of Liberty's centennial celebration.
Okay.
Voyager 2's Uranus flyby.
Okay.
Probably missed that one. The first class inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Really? The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame started in 1986?
Yeah, so an enterprising texter, because I don't have time, will look up who those first inducted Beatles, I'm guessing, and I don't know who else would go in there.
If you're starting in 1986,
Stones,
there's a whole bunch of people
Rolling Stones, that
came before that you can start inducting.
There's always surprises. And
considering how good the music was in the 50s and 60s.
Speaking of music, Bon Jovi's Slippery When Wet, great album. Metallica's Master of Puppets. Beastie Boys' License to Kill. Paul Simon's Graceland, which is a great
musical.
Well,
one of my favorites.
And Madonna's True Blue. All right, so I'm going to ask you some questions because it's your birthday.
Okay.
And I ask you questions because
Can we come back and do it?
Yeah, we should, because, God, we almost ran out of time.
All right, come back, and you're going to ask me some questions.
Just a few quick questions on your 40th birthday. All right, quick. Fire off five questions for you. Worst job you ever had, Kristen?
Ooh, I was a hostess at a vegan restaurant in San Francisco, but I was living in Berkeley, and I didn't have a car. So I would ride my bike to the BART, which was like a mile, leave my bike at the BART, take the BART to San Francisco, get down in the downtown area, walk another like half mile to go do my shift. And it was so boring. Like every other job I ever had was not, because it was like fine dining. So I would just sit there and be so bored. Versus my other job at the time was working at a bar on campus. That was way more fun. That was the only job I ever got fired from.
Ooh.
So I'm pretty sure they could tell how miserable I was.
More to that story. Tell it sometime. Some other time. Biggest on-air mistake.
When I was still on maternity leave in my old show, a different station, I was calling in to check in on Wednesdays. And I was very tired because I was postpartum. And I was very close to saying the F word on
stage. Whoa! That would
and be a I think big I was mistake. Ranting about something, and I was just like delirious with exhaustion, and I was very close to saying the F bomb on air, that but I caught myself. But I got dumped this week, so maybe that technically is
dropped it. Dropped the T word on the show. Anyway, your favorite Wisconsin, it could be anything, hidden gem or favorite place.
I'm sure they have more than this, but because it's top of mind, where we spent this last weekend was called Camp Kettlewood in East Troy, and it is a gem of a place. It is like elevated camping because they have antique cabins, they have antique campers.
It's been around for a long time, right?
No, he only owned it. The owner bought it in 2020.
Wow.
So I think it has his history as like a Girl Scout camp.
That's what it is.
Yeah, it was a Girl Scout camp, and now it's a camp where you can rent out different campsites. It's obviously in East Troy. There's still things you can go do, but we will be going back for sure next year.
What is your most irrational fear? What do you fear?
10 years ago, I think I feared never accomplishing anything.
Oh, that's a
common I don't really have that one as much anymore because I feel like I have accomplished some things. I don't know if I have an irrational fear.
Do you have a recurring dream? Like I have
still have a recurring
about that
theme
kind of
that
stuff.
I didn't finish college. That I didn't like. Oh. I was like,
you're one credit.
I was
short.
One credit short.
I think a lot of people
like
that
a
one.
Spanish class or something.
All right, what was your weirdest celebrity encounter?
Weirdest?
Yeah, or funniest or whatever. Strangest.
I mean, I got to party into the night with Chris Evans once.
Nice.
It was post Golden Globes. And this, I think, he's now been canceled. But when I was a young actress, my best friend was Armie Hammer. So like 18, 19, we were in acting class together and we were best friends. Then when I moved back in in 2019, he was already famous and yet not yet canceled. And so we partied after a Golden Globes party and there was a lot of celebrities in that room, including Chris Evans.
Nice. Real quick, I'll add one in. What's your favorite piece of advice from your 40-year-old self to your 30-year-old self?
There's no way around it. Just go through it.
Good stuff. Break for news, Jeremy and Janine, UrbanMilwaukee.com, after the break.
11 o'clock on a Thursday means it's time for a full hour of City Stories with Urban Milwaukee President Jeremy Janine on Point Taken.
All right, let's get this second half hour. You know what we're talking about. We're talking about local news, Milwaukee, City of Milwaukee, County of Milwaukee, with the one, the only, Jeremy Janine, UrbanMilwaukee.com. Welcome, as always.
He's back.
Thank you, and I have to start by acknowledging the cupcake in the room. Happy birthday, Kristen!
Hey, thank you.
Did I hear that you received the official first cupcake out of that?
No, he's not going to take one, but his daughter is coming.
Oh, so your daughter's.
And I think Aubrey rises to the occasion of, rises to the criteria of deserving of one of the 12 cupcakes.
Yeah, we won't make her eat it on air, because...
No. I also won't, like, make her jump through the hoops that all my teammates are going to have to jump through to... Earn one.
Yes.
Oh, you got to dance for your cookie.
Yeah.
Oh,
not Aubrey. Yeah. Aubrey gets one just because she's special.
All right. This first one is not new because we've talked about it basically for the last few months.
But it's come to a head. Marty Brooks, this happened I got to get my dates right. Last Monday, so about 10 days ago now, was fired for cause. And the fallout from that has continued because of some of the reasons he was fired for cause. I'm still waiting on an open records request for the specific bill of particulars that he was fired for, but I know many of those things. Some of those things I've alluded, I think, on air to shoes being the trigger for a lot of this.
Expensive shoes.
Which was funny because it was Louboutin shoes, right?
Correct.
Not to be confused with Louis Vuitton.
Okay, what's the difference?
Because I was listening to the morning show guys, and they called it Louis Vuitton, and I immediately texted in, and I was like, nope, those aren't the red bottom shoes. Got it wrong. And they didn't even, both of them were like, it's different?
Well, you have earned your salary today, because Steve and I certainly would have made that mistake.
I wouldn't have known.
Louis Vuitton is the, like, LX, like, the brown pattern, like, brown and gold pattern. Louboutin are the shoes that have the red bottom soles.
All right. Now we know.
So, as best understood, Marty, for a... coworker who was going through a health scare, not a health scare, serious health issue, bought this person a pair of shoes. I'm not naming that person because they're not accused of any wrongdoing in this case. He then also bought himself a pair of shoes, and an employee noticed this and reported it. This investigation then snowballed into all sorts of other things Marty has bought using a district credit card, including several political donations to different candidates, including Cavalier Johnson, David Crowley. People are coming out of the woodwork to say, look at that campaign finance report. Those individuals, Cavalier Johnson, David Crowley, probably didn't know Marty Brooks was using a district credit card, but that's a serious issue.
Because it was under his name.
Right.
But
right.
It wasn't his money.
So a process question. So the charges, so what kind of credit card was it? Was it a issued credit card from the org?
It was from the Wisconsin Center District, backed by tax dollars.
What was the review process? Because that should have been caught.
So this is an open question I'm still digging into. That actually the district's audit was just presented with no major concerns. But what is the internal control over?
Right.
Marty presumably turned in a credit card statement every month that said, okay, here's where I spent all my money. And no one was going, Act Blue. What's Act Blue? That's a donation to candidates. Well, we can't be sending tax dollars there.
Yeah. I mean, that's an obvious one.
That seemed not to have happened because these donations were made. Jose Perez received one going back to 2024.
Interesting.
Yes. Given wow, the pinch. Okay. Yes, the alleged pinch. So all these different things happen. A real wrinkle in this was actually, and I've a source that discussed this with me, and I can't go into too much detail, but there was a negotiation to try and buy Marty Brooks out. Marty Brooks turned down a figure that was approaching seven figures for getting bought out. And then he tried, after they were terminating him, to then accept the last offer, which this has now been publicly reported, $380,000 of, hey, no, I'll take that buyout offer after he got terminated for cause.
And that's gone now, that offer? Or is it still there?
Technically, it's gone. There was some concern that the board might meet again and maybe unfire him and accept that offer because then they avoid any threat of litigation over all this. That appears to have gone nowhere, so he's still fired for cause at the moment.
So, wow. I mean, that's a... Because up until these investigations, you know, it was like kind of one thing after the other, right? Like there was the pinch, then there was
The study.
The study and people having mixed feelings as far as do we... Like, who's pushing this and is there... Yeah. But then, like, this is legitimate cause as far as abusing funds for your own personal dalliances, right?
I think individually, if you look at any of these things, they're like, oh, he could have accidentally bought that and just failed to reimburse it. And he goes back and reimburses. I think anyone who's ever had a business credit card,
fair,
and I spent a lot of the last couple of weeks looking through campaign finance reports, they're making those reimbursements because they made a mistake and they self-reported it. What happened here is there was a pattern of not doing that. There's also questions. He spent several thousand dollars on Lego sets for the contractors who were paid millions of dollars to build the Baird Center. Like, here's a gift of the Baird Center as a custom Lego.
Oh, wow.
Like, is that criminal? Absolutely not. Is that a poor choice? Probably.
So that's a gray area, obviously. Yeah, there's some discretion allowed to the director.
Right. There was a
chairman.
Essentially, a lot of gray area here resulted in this unanimous termination. Now, I should be clear for what the law is and what his employment contract is. He's on a 30-day leave period where he can protest this termination. So this may not be the end of this story, or he could just silently go away.
Has anyone actually interviewed him? Has he made any kind of statement throughout this process?
He's quit responding at this point. Rich Kirchen did get him to say that he had moved to his second home in Florida after clearing out his desk and was working from there.
Well, since we have a forum, Marty Brooks, if you'd like to come on this show next week, this hour, you're more than welcome. Love to hear your side of the story. And we, all three of us, can entertain questions for you and get to the bottom of it, get to your side of the story, if you're willing. I would assume you would be.
Absolutely.
So we'll extend it. Maybe he was just waiting for an invitation.
Naive. I'm sure that's what it is.
That's naive, Steve. All right, we'll take a break. Jeremy Janine, UrbanMilwaukee.com. Before we forget, where's the tchotchke shop?
755 North Milwaukee Street, kitty corner from Hotel Metro and the Pfister Hotel. Wonderful place for things. Milwaukee and Wisconsin gifts. Very popular at this time of year.
All right. Love that. All right, quick break here on Point Taken.
Keeping you updated on culture and creativity. What's on tap with...
Third Eye Blind? Tonight, are you going?
Absolutely.
Hey, I'll see you there.
You kids.
All the millennial Gen Xers enjoying Third Eye Blind tonight. Was it 10?
Are you going to all do 10? Like your arm wave at certain songs like that?
Get the lighter out?
Yeah, all that.
For those of us who don't smoke it. And just randomly still have lighters.
Love it.
All right. Welcome back. I am Kristen. He is Steve. We're here with Jeremy Janine on this Thursday. He is back. All right. Let's talk a little bit more about what to do with high-speed chases.
Yeah, so we have a kind of a policing block of stories here. We'll be able to go into some of these in greater detail next week because the council is going to act on at least one of them. This one about high-speed chases is something that's been percolating for many months within City Hall. The police department's been looking at it. The Fire and Police Commission's been looking at it. And now the Common Council's been looking at it. There's a general agreement. 10 deaths last year was 10 too many resulting from high-speed chases. Thankfully, none were of officers involved in the chases, but a number of them were essentially bystanders that were drawn into this because the chase came to them. And they were spread across six incidents, and then one of the deaths was actually someone that was paralyzed in 2024, died in 2025. The Fire and Police Commission would like to rein in the ability of the police department to do chases. And they have a very specific area they want to target that if, Kristen, if you're pulled over for speeding and then you engage in reckless driving, that they don't want you, the police, to chase you at that point. If the first offense isn't reckless driving, don't initiate a chase. And that applies to about 15% of the 970 chases the police did last year. There were been 111 chases last year, on average about 15%. The police department says, no, we want to pursue in those cases. And again, this is just an offense where they attempt to pull someone over for any infraction that's not reckless driving. Then the person does something reckless to not be pulled over. The police department says, no, we actually made a change in February, which gives our officers more discretion to say, we're terminating this chase for safety reasons, and we want to see how that data plays out. The Common Council members are kind of all over the place, but we're here in this three-party discussion now because Act 12, the sales tax law, stripped the Fire and Police Commission of its authority to change police department policy. So this normally would have been an open and shut case just between the Fire and Police Commission and the police department. We now have this kind of trifecta going on where the Fire and Police Commission says, Chief Norman, we'd like you to change. He says no, and they can then appeal to the Common Council for a two-thirds vote. And in that, in this case, it appears the Common Council is going to say no. It was defeated on a 1-4 vote at the Public Safety and Health Committee. There is another proposal we'll pivot to coming, though, that does have full council support for likely a two-thirds override, which is to change how the city responds to if ICE shows up in town.
Sort of a process question. So when I knew this was on the agenda, I looked it up, like national best practices. And you mentioned the one, thresholds, right? Yeah. So that criteria makes sense. The other one is environmental. So you have school zones, weather conditions, traffic conditions, density, time of day. Why are we just not, like a lot of cities across this country, just following the national best practices on this? Or are we on the way to that?
For high-speed chases, this is the argument from Bree Spencer on the Fire and Police Commission. She's the vice chair, said Milwaukee is way out of alignment on what the best practices are. I'm not an expert to talk in detail on what specifically those are, but one of them they're citing is that initiating a chase only after a non-high-speed, non-reckless driving offense, like that's out of line with national best practice. And they don't want to block the authority of the police department to do high-speed chases. They just want to do slight dial turns.
Right.
Well, because... I mean, I get it. I get the deterrence of, like, we will come after you, and, like, just because you speed away doesn't mean you're going to get off scot-free. But, I mean, is this where, like, the flocking cameras or something like that might actually help because you can get it someone's driver's license? Because, I don't know.
Yeah, it's a very good point. The police department, one of the things they say is they're now deploying, there's seven police districts, they're deploying two squad cars in each district to have something called Star Chase, which is essentially a gun that's mounted on the front of the squad car and shoots a little projectile that attaches to the car, pretty hard to see, is part of the sales pitch, I guess, from the company, that then GPS tracks that company. The Fire and Police Commission, which has expressed concern about other surveillance stuff, is talking about, we'd like you guys to use more drones in these situations.
Yeah.
So you're able to follow the car from above.
Makes sense. Technology. The other thing that we're seeing under Attorney Goyke is a rise in these convictions for reckless driving, which... my mind, a good thing.
Yeah, this is a very clearly a good thing. Evan Goyke was elected in early 2024, replacing Tierman Spencer. In October 2024, he joins with the mayor, with the district attorney incoming, Kent Laverne, and Police Chief Jeffrey Norman, and says, if you're charged with reckless driving, we're going to prosecute that to the max. We're not going to plea bargain that down. And the net result of that, now flash forward to 2026, has been 15% of charges used to be, if you were charged with reckless driving, you got convicted of reckless driving. That's now up to 85%.
Oh, wow.
Dramatic change.
Gosh. And what is the... sorry, go for that.
Oh, the key thing is the second offense for reckless driving previously wasn't a criminal case. We now have a state law change. So Evan Goyke prosecutes municipal offenses. Those second offenses now are criminal cases, and Kent Laverne, as the DA, also committed to not plea bargaining those down.
Nice. So that's an actual change I think most people would stand behind.
My question was going to be, what is the typical sentence... if convicted,
so
if
you're convicted of a municipal offense, the penalties are often very, very small and monetary. But the key thing is getting that conviction puts you in the process, if you continue to offend, to get a real penalty of jail time or something more severe for a second criminal offense.
Real quick before we get to the break, the police chief, Jeffrey Norman, promises to focus more on nuisance properties and landlords.
Common Ground is a big Southside campaign. They said looked at the data and found over basically a 10-year period, the amount of this nuisance designation had gone way down, which is a penalty the police department can use to force compliance from bad landlords. Jeffrey Norman ran his own data, determined, yes, it has gone down. He openly admitted, I think the exact words were, we can take our eye off the ball, and committed to doubling down on making sure nuisance designations were allowed where appropriate. And there's a full discussion on Urban Milwaukee about where those things actually are.
Lots more with Jeremy and Janine, UrbanMilwaukee.com. Streetcar festivals. Hello, it's Summerfest time. We'll get to that after this. Couple minutes remaining with Jeremy Dean. This half hour of his hour on our Thursday program. He's here every Thursday from UrbanMilwaukee.com. Jeremy Janine. All right, streetcar festivals, take it away.
And again, if you can use it to go to see Third Eye Blind tonight, which Jaslyn has played once again, and find Kristen and I there celebrating her birthday.
What time's that show at? Do we know?
I think it's 10. Someone in the text here said, selfishly, I feel like Third Eye Blind should be at 6 p.m. due to the age of those of us who would like to be in the audience.
Good points.
So it'd be Bill and Joe better bring it tomorrow.
It will be Jake Curtis.
Ah.
Joe's coming tonight, so Joe and I may be a little slow tomorrow.
That's right. I'll pick
the
up
conservatives may have it up one up on us.
All right. So what's going on with the hop?
If you're looking to get to Summerfest and you're always concerned about paying for parking, or you don't want to deal with the bar shuttle for whatever reason, and also you've been streetcar curious for a while and don't understand who would use it, now is the time to do it. The festival line configuration. The city actually has two streetcar lines. They have the M, the main line, and the L, the lakefront line. They're joining them together for the rest of the summer into the F festival line, which means every streetcar goes on the lakefront extension, takes you right almost to the north gate of the Summerfest grounds, right across the street. So if I were giving out free parking advice, I'd say park on like Lion Street near Ogden tonight at the north end of the route. Get on the streetcar. It'll loop you around, take you to the base of the couture, get out, right, walk right into Summerfest. And then when you're ready to go home, just walk back to the couture, hop on. They'll get you right back. Great way to actually use the streetcar if you haven't.
Traditionally, they do well. Yeah, they do well during traffic. Summerfest.
Yes, very. Streetcars, great utility for this.
Yeah, so all those bashers of the hop, and there are a lot of them out there.
Are you a basher of the hop?
I'm neutral.
I feel like, yeah, you don't really have a lot of...
No, for people that utilize it, knock yourself up. I think at some point you have to figure out, you know, what the future is.
My thing has always been, we got to figure out what it is.
Yeah, and once we do that, could you mentioned BART earlier, great example of a system that works. Yeah. It was there in the 80s when I was
getting the streetcar to go to some of the venues of like getting to the Fiserv, getting to the AmFam, getting to Pada.
Getting a Wolski's. Just kidding. We got Neil. That was for me and all of you. Put the past away. I wish you would step back from that ledge, my friend. I
would understand. I'm actually getting really excited now as we keep having these Third Eye Blind.
He's winded you up. That's what he's doing.
Third Eye Blind bump backs. I'm like, oh, this is going to be so fun tonight. All right, welcome back. I am Kristen. He is Steve. We're talking to Jeremy Janine on this Thursday, and we are moving to Landlord Homes, Embattled Landlord. David Tomlin makes surprise City Hall appearance.
Yeah, I was walking into City Hall last week, and I ran into a real estate developer that I hadn't had the chance to meet in person yet.
I love that you just know what they look like. I don't think I would know.
I wouldn't know
what a lot of them. Like, I wouldn't recognize their name, but like knowing their face, probably not.
So you spend enough time watching meetings, you recognize these people over time. And so I said hi to this person. Then this other person walks up to me and goes, "Am I in the right place?" And he had a Highgrove Holdings shirt on. And
I was like,
Highgrove Holdings, which is the company we're about to talk about.
Okay.
So I was like, I recognize this guy, but I can't quite place him yet. And then he continues to walk into City Hall, into the rotunda, into the middle of Common Ground's rally before this meeting, which is about the Jeffrey Norman nuisance property thing. Well, this individual is David Tomlin, and he's the very reason Common Ground was rallying, because they launched that campaign with City Attorney Evan Goyke back at the end of March. And Tomlin, who is based in Los Angeles, owns about 260 properties in Milwaukee, or is about to own a lot less, as we'll get to in the second story. But he's just been this absent figure, and all of a sudden he shows up with no reason to show up. He's not called. He just comes, and then he comes upstairs to the committee room, and he just sits through the meeting. And then when Kevin Solomon from Common Ground is doing a press scrum afterwards, I doing my tricky reporter trick, which is, David Tomlin is standing right behind you. Are you guys on the same page right now? And usually the person then would scatter into the wind, but David Tomlin turns and faces all the cameras and engaged in just a phenomenal from a reporting standpoint standpoint.
Just gave it up.
Engage, where Jenna Ray from WTMJ was like, do you own nuisance properties? And he goes, well, I own what the Department of Neighborhood Services calls nuisance properties. And granted, they call them that because they've been 4,000 plus code violations they've cited him for. So make your own determination there.
I think there. That qualifies.
So just this really weird moment where he's there at City Hall and he steps right into this press conference. And the reason I think he was in Milwaukee was 2 days later, he had a foreclosure case in front of a judge for the one third of his property that the city is not suing him over. So a cluster of about 86 homes. The city is a party to this lawsuit, but U.S. Bank is suing on a foreclosure case for this group of properties, primarily clustered on the north side. We're talking single family, duplex homes. There's a photo of one of them in our article where there's a light on and the ceiling is collapsing right next to it. People are living in these conditions. And the court instituted what the lender and the city are asking for, which is a receiver. So now David Tomlin he owns the property still for now, but there's a receiver. A third party is now controlling these properties. And the hope from Common Ground, from the city, and from the lender is that improvements are going to be made to these properties. But the question is, more than 40% of them are vacant. So how is they going to fund making code compliance repairs?
I was going to ask you the financial state of his business. Is it on solid footing?
This is the biggest problem. And this is when I talk to people about this off the record. Like, I don't understand how the math on any of this adds up. And this is going to be a big problem for the city's case where they hope improvements can be made, because for generally across this whole portfolio of 260 properties, about 40% of them are vacant, which means there's no cash flow. And so if you're trying to improve those properties as a receiver, you have no cash to do that. If the city takes ownership, it's going to have to come up with cash elsewhere. And then the other 60%, many of them seem to be in pretty bad condition. Now, Tomlin defends himself and says 85% of his tenants have signed a letter saying that essentially he's a great guy, and Common Ground obviously disputes that and says they were signed under duress. Tomlin says he's going to have some press event that he's going to show us all essentially what a great guy he is. That's yet to happen. He's been promising it now for several weeks.
So no acknowledgement that there are problems from David Tomlin.
He acknowledges that his business plan that involved buying properties and closing them has caused a cash issue, but not of, we have the serious public health nuisance we've created.
All right, we'll take a break. After the break, it's not a data center. Even though
it is.
Even though it might be.
There's multiple versions of data centers.
After this. All right, we've teed this one up before, but Jeremy Janine, UrbanWalking.com, will give us the latest on it's not a data center, but it is something. What is it?
This is consistently a problem. Is we don't have a definition of what a data center really is.
Yeah.
Because it used to be a data center was a room with a bunch of computers in it. So I could build one in my basement. There could be one in the back room at Good Karma Brands. But then this thing called hyperscalers came into view, which is Microsoft, OpenAI, Anthropic, building these facilities that are 1 million plus square feet that have all these concerns about water use, about energy use, about noise. So what's proposed for the former Walmart and Midtown Center in the middle of Milwaukee, about 60th and Capitol, is nothing of the sort of that large. But the person proposing it, Trent Overhue of Affordable Family Storage, and the quote data center is one of many different things happening at this facility, just seems to always try to be elusive about this. So I got a chance to do an interview with him last week, and he said, no, it's not a data center. But then he did this twisted words thing, which is what drew my attention to it in the first place a couple weeks ago, which is, well, it seems like you're describing a data center because you're talking about a computer research facility. He is proposing to bring in a little bit of extra power to the building. Says We Energies has plenty of capacity, but it's going to be in the back. So the Walmart, just to throw some numbers at you, 160,000 square foot Walmart. The parking lot would be redeveloped as 200 unit affordable housing buildings. The city would put a new library in the front of the Walmart. There'd be a 30,000 square foot community use that the city has not disclosed yet. Trent's main business, the Affordable Family Storage, would occupy most of the Walmart at about 90,000 square feet. And then about a 19,000 square foot computer research facility, or a data center, I guess, at the back of the building would be added in there. And the reason he's pursuing that is because that's a fairly lucrative area for companies that need computing power. You think of, it's not who the tenant is, but like a Direct Supply might need a new data center with lots of computing power. It doesn't need a Microsoft-sized thing. Mm-hmm. They're putting it back here. There's all kinds of somewhat misguided concern that, oh, this thing's going to emit all this noise. It's going to be bad for water. It's like going to have this terrible neighborhood impact. As Trent says, you'll never know that we would exist in the back of this building. Now, he tells me I've done this in other cities, but he won't tell me where they've done it, which I don't think is doing his case good.
Yeah.
Well, somebody emailed me, God, it must have been a month or two ago when we were talking about this, I think this story or something related to data centers, that one of the newer ideas in some of these urban settings is to have these smaller facilities and you network them so they're not all together and somehow network that computing power to make it a bigger overall system.
Yes.
I mean, that could be part of what this is.
What?
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, just for if you're having a hard time imagining what 19,000 square feet looks like, I was driving down Water Street and the now empty AJ Bombers building is like up for rent or lease or whatever. Maybe they're selling it. That's 12,000 square feet.
Yeah.
Right? So it's like 19,000 square feet is not that big.
No. And this is in the back of a building that you won't see. It's governed by the city's noise ordinances. It doesn't have exterior generators. There will be a backup generator that's inside the building. It uses a closed looped water facility, which he points to the Pick and Save across the street that uses the same facility. So the cooling isn't just constantly sucking in water. It's recirculating the same water. So fairly innocuous, but Alderman Mark Chambers schedules three community meetings about this. The first one gets taken over not by a group of neighbors, but by members of the Party for Socialism and Liberation who just want to show up and kind of yell, it would seem, about this and not have a discussion about the facts. But the city now finds itself in a tenuous position where it's got a deal on the line where it can get this new library. It can get a community use, which it hasn't been able to publicly identify yet, but I can vouch that what they're talking about is a true community use. But it's conditioned on the storage and this data, whatever it is, computing component at the back, also getting approved. That makes the finances for the whole thing worse. The developer gives the land at the front to the city for free in exchange for putting these things in the
give
back.
And take. You're not going to, it's everything's not 100% win. You're going to give something to get something. In this case, affordable housing, library, other uses. Come on, give and take.
I mean, is there a threat that by blocking this aspect of the development, it would block everything?
Yes, the whole development would fall apart.
Okay.
Compromise.
So there's a community meeting tonight at the former Walmart, 5825 West Hope Avenue, 5:30 to 7. It's an open house meeting. Show up for whatever part you want to see. And then there's next Saturday, there'll be a virtual open house that you can come learn more.
And don't show up and yell. It's a waste of everybody's time and not good for your eardrums. We'll wrap it up with Jeremy Janine, UrbanMilwaukee.com after this.
All right, what do you got left, Jeremy?
Let's talk trains, because I know you're going to do a lot of that next week, but let's talk about what's actually getting ready to roll in Wisconsin. Wisconsin seeks federal grant to start Madison train service. This is somewhat a recast of the proposal incoming Governor Scott Walker chucked in 2010 for the 110-mile-per-hour proposal. It's a more cost-effective version of it. It's much cheaper, but it would be slower. It would initially be, depending on the segment, 79 or 59 miles per hour instead of 110. And the vision here is extending the existing Hiawatha train that goes between Chicago and Milwaukee round the corner, essentially, and keep going to Madison with stops in Pewaukee and Watertown. There was a webinar in April where the state and Amtrak laid out a lot of the work they've done. They also kind of laid out the timeline that's going to be forthcoming on that. And now the communities on that route, Pewaukee and Watertown, are going through their internal approval process to say, okay, this is where the station would be. It'd likely be a temporary station. We could move it in the future. But we want to do a letter of support because the hope is for this $200-some million project, again, about a quarter of the $800 million cost from 15 years ago, that project would be 80% funded, hopefully, by the federal government. The best case scenario sees this starting in 2029. I would guess it will likely be a little bit later than that. Part of that is the politics. I don't know that the Trump administration will be jumping on the bandwagon to fund this. But there is momentum. I have an article breaking down kind of the different ownership that affects the different track speeds, the plans, where the actual stations would go in those two communities, and then other details involved in how this would work. But two round trips a day. The vision would be you could wake up in Madison and make it to a morning meeting in Chicago, and then you could leave around dinner time and be home.
There you go. All right, well, I'll quickly plug the event for next week. June 25th, the High Speed Rail Alliance is putting on an event called Thinking Big About Wisconsin Passenger Rail. I am I'm just emceeing. I'm definitely not one of the experts. And so, but there are still tickets. And so if you go to hsrail.org, there is on their events page there. You can get more information there. I'll put it in our newsletter this weekend as well. But we would love to see you there and learn more about how to get around without having to drive yourself.
I suspect this project I was just talking about, Hiawatha West, it's called, will be a big topic of conversation.
I would imagine, yeah.
All right, since we love audience involvement in the show, a question for Jeremy. Is there a timeline for creating that plaza overhead walkway across Lincoln Memorial Drive between the Couture and the lakefront side?
So there's no timeline yet. The project is designed but unfunded. The vision is essentially from the second level of the Couture, you'd be able to walk down towards the Summerfest grounds, never have to cross the street on the ground. And then the other thing we were talking about in the break, the construction on Lincoln Memorial Drive there, it's all part of rebuilding the Michigan and Lincoln Memorial intersection. That is supposed to be wrapping up today. Now, it rained a lot yesterday, so I don't know how that impacts the timeline.
I'm not confident that's going to be done.
But the vision was, going back a month or two now, to get out of the way for Summerfest now that there's so many people that are not familiar with that area, so Steve doesn't have to yell at them when he's driving to work.
You think about how long that's been going on, the Couture building and all that, you know, now we're talking about 794 and whatever that's going to be, you know, in the future, that way out. Just settle that corner the hell down. Let's get that fixed. Because we got festivals to go to.
We have festivals to go to. And Jeremy and I have a festival to go to tonight.
Yeah. Well, tell me how it is tomorrow. I mean,
we will. We'll tell you how it went. Awesome. But yes, if you're at Summerfest tonight, come find Jeremy. Come find me. We'll say hi. And a big shout out to Jim Santel, who did indeed.
He did.
Came through. And for my birthday, I'm holding it in my hand, a pocket constitution that I can now reference.
All right. Happy birthday, Christian Bride. We'll be back tomorrow with the guys right here on 620 WTMJ.